Okay, so we had a brief little break there, but I'm here with Thomas Keenan, who's written a book called Techno Creep and has also given a talk. It was a talk, not a panel, right?
Well, it's a talk, and it's all about how technology is creeping into your body.
Does that not sound so extremely interesting, guys? I mean, okay, so we're going to have you here for about 30 minutes.
Okay.
How did your talk go?
Well, it's happening. It's at 6 o'clock today, so there's still time to either come down or to watch it on the stream. And I got to give compliments to this conference. The stream is darn good. I was laying in bed this morning watching a session on toxicology and really enjoying it. So the stream is not a bad way to go.
Awesome. I'm glad that that's working out. Everybody thinks that the audio-video stuff is coming from Radio Statler, and it's not. We're just doing the audio stream.
Okay, well, so whoever's doing whatever they're doing up there is working great, too.
Oh, yeah. For people who would like to know a little bit more about what your talk is going to be on, could you give a little bit of a preview without giving too much away?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, basically, I've been around technology for a long time. I grew up in New York City, and I wrote my first computer program in 1964. So I've been kind of watching it. And back then, if you held, like, sat on a bus or subway and you held a computer printout, you were this weird, creepy nerd. And now, you know, you look and everybody has their smartphones out and, you know, they're all using the technology. But if you think about it, they're not thinking about what's going on in the background. So every time you look at something on Amazon, for example, every time you post something on Facebook, you are being tracked and analyzed and sold. And so the underlying premise is that people ought to know more about this. So I picked all the funnest examples that I could think of. And the particular ones I'm focusing on here are ones that have to do with our bodies.
So when you say our bodies, do you mean like when people are searching for their medications and like Googling for information about what they're putting on their body or symptoms? Or are we talking about something far more insidious and embedded?
Both.
Or
I mean,
both.
I'm taking a very broad definition. Like, if you think about those aura photographs that show your aura, anything that's in your body, on your body, or even around your body. So, you know, one example, a lot of people, not so much at this conference, are wearing fitness monitors, like the Nike Fuel Band. Well, it is now well known that your Nike Fuel Band knows when you're having sex.
I did not hear about that.
Think about this. First of all, it's got accelerometers and things like that, but it's really simple. If you effectively burn 150 calories at 2:30 in the morning and you take zero steps, it can make certain deductions, and it probably will. And that's fine as long as it's your Nike Fuel Band. But when you take it to the next level, let's say you download it, let's say you post it on the internet, let's say your insurance company says, you know what, if you do a certain amount of exercise every day, we'll give you a discount on your life insurance. Well, you might have to strap your Nike Fuel Band on and wear it all the time. All of a sudden, you're sharing a lot of your personal habits with an insurance company that maybe you didn't know you were sharing.
That's a really good point. I think a lot of people probably don't think all the way through on that. With your talk and your book, when did your book come out?
The book has actually just been out for a few months. It's still on what they call pre-sale on Amazon, but I was like really astounded. I mean, one of the creepy things is I have a friend who wrote a book too, and there's a little subsection called like internet, you know, computers, internet privacy. And I saw that I was ranked like number 65 and she was ranked number 64. And I thought, oh, that's cool, you know, right, whatever. And then the next day I was ranked like 35. And I asked my publisher, how do this happen? Because there are no sales of the book yet. And they looked into it and it's like pre-order. So you can pre-order it on Amazon. You can get it directly from orbooks.com, which is a wonderful New York publisher. They published Julian Assange's book. They published the Bradley Manning trial, the sort of picture book of the Bradley Manning trial. So they do really good things. So that's why I picked them as a publisher. And they'll sell it to you right now in either ebook or paperback format.
Yeah, they actually, if you're at the conference now and listening, they have a vendor booth. They're very nice and they take credit card.
They definitely do. And thank you very much for buying one.
Hey, no problem. So how much tie-in from the book is there between your book and your talk?
The talk is loosely based on the book and some of the things that I found out. But, you know, just as an example, you know, to kind of continue the stuff around your body, I suggest that the creepiest place in America is Disney World. Because now when you go to Disney World, you get a My Magic wristband.
Yeah.
And even if you're like a little five-year-old, they put one on your wrist, and it's the magic key. It opens up the gate so that you get to go into the park. But the other thing is you're being continuously tracked. And as a result, they not only know where you are all the time, but if you have a little girl and she's walking up to Minnie Mouse, Minnie Mouse will see on her iPad, Sally is approaching now. Her favorite character is Minnie. Her remaining credit limit for today is $43, and all of a sudden the $40 doll comes out. So they're actually using it to target our children.
Yeah, actually, I definitely agree with you. I think it goes for a lot of theme parks, but Disney is possibly the most loved and creepiest organization on the face of the planet. And I say that I love Disney. I love the work that they do, but holy crap.
They do amazing work. They have a whole thing called Disney Labs that invents stuff. So they've now invented something called Inshindensen, which is a technology. It's actually very interesting to radio people because you can actually hold this thing in your hand and a microphone and record something, and it's stored, and then you can touch somebody's ear, like put your finger in the person's ear, and they will hear what you said.
Wow.
So this is something they invented. And they don't know what to do with it. They haven't come up with a ride that uses this thing yet. But if you just Google Disney Labs, they have all these projects. And they go to academic conferences and they present. One of the things that nobody ever realizes is that you'll never smell a fart at Disneyland or Disney World. And there's a reason for that. They have a patented technology called the Smellitzer. So the Smellitzer is continuously pumping out smells. So if you're on Main Street, you're going to smell cookies baking. The cookies are baked far away from Main Street, but you're going to smell those chocolate chip cookies because they have chocolate chip cookie smell. If you're on Pirates of the Caribbean, you're going to smell the sea. If you're in a haunted mansion, it'll smell musty. And they actually overwhelm any other smell. So, you know, that little fart doesn't have a chance against the Smellitzer.
That's impressive. I actually did not know about that. I did know about the band, though. So somebody actually did a teardown.
Good. Yeah. I was hoping they would.
So I don't remember what site it was. It was, you know, it's, you know, middle of the afternoon. You're not paying attention about where you're clicking, but mm-hmm. you find something really interesting. And so not only is it an RFID tag, which is a passive thing, they also have, it looks like active infrastructure on it as well, which is actually what applies all the creepiness to it. So, and not only does it keep track of, like, I'm not sure about the credits thing, but it also does, so it ties into the whole system. So if you're doing the whole Disney experience and you're staying at the Disney hotels, it will charge your meals. It will, so if you get your picture taken, you can go on the website and your picture, even if it was incidental and you didn't, like, it makes a lot of the paperwork. But
we
also
spotted you having fun, so let's sell you the picture.
So it's like, it's this really fine line between, you know, if you're aware that you're being surveilled all the time in Walt Disney parks and you're willingly going and know that you're making that trade-off, it makes you feel a little bit better. It makes things a lot easier. But I think if you weren't aware of it, it's creepy as hell.
And get this, I mean, you don't have to take one of those wristbands. You can actually still get a paper ticket and you can give it to the person at the gate and you'll get in. But get this, all those privileges, like five times a day you can go to the front of the line, don't apply then. So you've paid the same amount of money, but you've lost all those privileges. Imagine explaining, you know, father explained to his five-year-old, well, no, that family can go right on, but we're going to stand on this two-hour line because we value our privacy, right? This doesn't work. So I have this concept in the book called de facto mandatory.
Yeah.
Like, you can live in New York without a car, but it's pretty hard to live in L.A. without a car, or Calgary where I live. So it's de facto mandatory. It's too much hassle to do without it. At Disney World now, everybody's getting these bands because you'd be an idiot not to. And as you said, it's great that somebody tore it down, and I hope that by DEF CON, somebody will have figured out a way to make it a lifelong pass.
Oh, man. Disney would hate that.
They'll put you in jail.
Okay, so your background, you've been working with computers for a very long time. What kind of led you up to this point?
You know, I actually had a lot to do with the media and, you know, things like you're doing right now, because I kept getting calls about things that I thought were creepy. And the New York Times ran a headline about an app. It was about 3 years ago. It said, "Girls Around Me, App Takes Creepy to a New Level." And all these reporters would call me and say, "What do you think of this?" So I had to research it. And simply what it was, some person in Russia came up with an app that would take the four square check-ins that young people always do when they go to a bar. They want their friends to know, so they are checked in on Foursquare and integrated with the Facebook feed of the same people if their profile was poorly secured. So you could take your smartphone if you're a creepy guy and go, she's kind of cute. Oh, I see she's not in a relationship. Her favorite band is the Bare Naked Ladies. I'm going to go talk to her. And it's a power imbalance. You go over there and you know all about her and she knows nothing about you except you just put your phone in your pocket, and that's creepy.
I definitely agree. I think I don't know anybody who would think that's not creepy.
Yeah, and they got shut down. Foursquare quite properly shut off their access. But other apps like this have come up, Gaze Around Me and so on. And the other thing is it's not going to matter because facial recognition is getting so good. I have a friend who actually tried an experiment. He took all the anonymous photos on Match.com for Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And when people post their photo there, they don't give their name. They're Sexy Babe 235 or Hung Guy 404 or something like that. And then if they, you know, want a relationship, they'll tell you who they are. He took those photos and he took the identified Facebook photos, ran them together, and about 30% of the time he could de-anonymize the people.
Oh, wow.
And that's like 2 years ago. Now facial recognition is so good, there's actually an app called NameTag,
mm-hmm.
and you can hold it up, and it will take somebody's face and look them up in a database. Currently, the only database they say they have is the National Registry of Sex Offenders, so you can make sure you're not about to date a sex offender. But the day will come when there's Facebook in there. They'll get all the Facebook photos somehow, and you'll be walking down the street, and it'll be, I think I know that guy. Hey, Sam, how's your wife, Sally? And, you know, just looking up in your Google Glass, you'll have all the information. So we won't need to remember people's names anymore. It'll all be kind of spoon-fed to us.
So in this future, what should we do? Do you have any ideas about what we should be doing?
Yeah, I have a whole chapter on decreeping your profile. The first thing is to make it hard to track you. So, you know, why have one email address when you can have 100 email addresses? If you're going to, you know, have one for work and one for home, that's all right. But maybe you want one for all those magazines you subscribe to, all that sketchy stuff you buy on the internet that you don't want anybody to know about. Let's say you're going to send your DNA in to be analyzed on 23andMe. Only an idiot would put their real name on there because now they've got your DNA, which you can never change, and they've got your real name. So, you know, my cat's DNA was sent in and got analyzed, and my cat's very interested in the results and so on. You know, so, you know, you can make up any name you want. There's no law that says you can't be Bartok for Nubilax if you want to use that as a name, as long as you can remember how to spell it. The problem is people think that they have to give their name. They go, oh, this is an official form. I used to give speeches with a police officer, and she would say to kids mainly, well, whenever they ask for your name, just write in your name or IP freely or something like that.
Good advice. Very good advice. So is there any way that we can possibly fight against this tide of just all of this deluge of information that just leaks from everybody?
No, but you make it confusing. Okay, so there were inferences. For a while, Amazon had this cool thing where, they still do, of course, suggest people who bought this might like this. And for a while, if you bought Call of Duty, the video game, it said people who bought this product also bought adult-sized disposable diapers. So they uncovered a trend, which is that people who are real serious gamers want to sit there and not leave the game console, so they need diapers. And they don't do that anymore. I mean, I checked it recently. But they're making those inferences. So if you just inquire about weird stuff, you know, coffins at Walmart and stuff like that, you can sort of mess up the system. But as a lot of people said, that's a lot of work. The people at this conference will do it, okay? The people at HOPE are the kind of folks who will go out there and mess with the system. There was a guy yesterday holding out fake Safeway loyalty cards that ended in the number 2600. So if enough people use those cards, the same person will be shopping in many different Safeway stores all over America, and that's kind of fun. So
yeah,
you can mess with the system that way, and there's nothing illegal about that. I mean, I got the Safeway card, and you'd be stupid not to get it. Again, it's de facto mandatory. Why pay the higher price when they'll give you the discount? But I gave them an address in Bangkok, so I don't know if they send any mail there.
Let's
talk about genetics.
Okay? Yeah, let's talk about genetics.
So, I mean, genetics is quite amazing. You sending your sample to 23andMe, they used to be able to also tell you that you're going to be subject to premature baldness and you have a higher than average risk of prostate cancer, blah, 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 blah. Now the Food and Drug Administration says, no, that's practicing medicine without a license. You can't do that. But they will still send you your raw genome. And you can take that genome and you can run it through some open source programs and find out if you have certain conditions, certain alleles that predispose you to that. The problem is if your DNA gets out there, insurance companies can do that too. And they can start to analyze whether you might have the gene for drunkenness. I once found a paper on the gene for drunkenness. And first of all, it was about mice. So if you're worried that your pet mice are going to get drunk, it's a problem. And there is no gene for drunkenness. If you're a Buddhist nun who never touches alcohol, you will not become an alcoholic. You might, get addicted to Buddhist nun pornography or something, but you won't become an alcoholic. You might just have an addictive personality. And it's only a tendency. Not everybody with that gene becomes an alcoholic. So there's a lot of this junk science around genetics. But what is true is that there are people now who have found their long-lost adoptive parents or even sperm donor father. There's one great case where a 15-year-old boy tracked down his father, even though the father had never posted his DNA online, because the kid had his DNA analyzed, and then he found relatives of the father, and he triangulated and finally went, hey, Dad, it's about time to pay for college. And, of course, when this guy did it in a bottle 15, 20, 16 years ago, he was never expecting. I think he fathered 298 kids, and now he's kind of worried they're all going to find him.
In that specific instance, at least, aren't there liability, like release forms for that?
No, there were, but the law can change.
It does.
We're moving to this whole thing of open adoption. One of the creepier things I found, there's a sperm bank down in Maryland, and you can actually specify, the kind of donor you want, black, white, that's understandable. But then you get down to, you can put in a photo, like you can put in Brad Pitt, and it will find their sperm donors who have the facial characteristics most like Brad Pitt. And I put in, African-American and Brad Pitt, and it said, it didn't have any good matches. So, they are doing something there with that data. There's also a weird thing, some guy's sperm, it's like, certain wines are a better vintage. There's sperm that actually is worth more for a weird, creepy reason. People who have had children with a certain sperm donor want their other children to also be fathered by that sperm donor. So there's a premium on getting another vial of that guy's juice so that you can actually have siblings who are genetically related.
Yeah.
And there's a club in New York which now has 17 kids in it, all of whom have the same sperm donor father. And they get together, and it's really bizarre because they all kind of look alike.
Wow. We're probably going to be getting around time to let you go here so you can go and relax a little bit before you have your talk. Is there anything that you're worried that you won't be able to really get in or anything else you want to mention?
Basically, it's the attitude, okay, that we should be very skeptical about giving out information, be information stingy, have fun with it. I mean, I guess that's, part of the premise of my book. A lot of the examples in there are totally fun, and I'm not saying it's bad. Like, there's surveillance. We had a woman in Ontario who lost her $50 million lottery ticket, and she gets a knock on the door, and the lottery people say, "We'd like to talk to you," and she thought she was in trouble, but they said, "We have video surveillance that shows you buying a lottery ticket that you never cashed. We think we owe you $50 million. So she's the happiest woman on earth. But how did they get her? They got her through credit card records and also surveillance cameras in the drugstore. So for one in 50 million people, it does a good thing. But for most of us who are law-abiding citizens, do you really want somebody watching what you bought at the drugstore? And that's basically what's happening with the surveillance cameras. So I get pretty worried, there's a TV show called Person of Interest, that all those cameras are being tied together and analyzed with artificial intelligence. I asked somebody pretty high up in the government, "What do you think of that show?" And he just said, "We have it already."
That's terrifying. All right. Well, so the book is Techno Creep?
Yes.
It's by Thomas Keenan.
It has a website, technocreep.com, and the publisher is OR Books, so they're orbooks.com, and they have many other great books like Julian Assange's book and so on, so I definitely encourage people to check it out.
All right. Well, it was great having you on. We're going to cut off and prepare to get some more interesting people in here, but it was great having you.
Thanks, Matthew.
Hey, no problem.